ready.
NBC didn't have to create rape allegations to keep from selling to Bill Cosby. That's like me saying I don't want to sell you my car, but then going around telling people you rob banks.
For real talk.
Hey man, I'm just gonna say it. If you don't think you sexist, ask yourself why you champion LeVar Ball but think Cardi B should go away.
All the time.
Not everybody's gonna like you, but don't ever, ever apologize for trying to be a better person.
Welcome to the Spann Report with your host, Mr. Spann.
Everybody, welcome to the Spann Report Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Spann. This is episode number 201 of the report, and right now we're rocking out to some old school intro, man. Come inside, rock out with your boy. Indeed, man. We are chilling out here on this Saturday afternoon. It's episode number 201, like I said before. We are starting off on our next 100, man. Our race to 300 is starting right now, man. So let's see if we can get to 300 episodes by the end of the year. Nah, let's not do that. let's just let that shit happen the way it should. But, yo, man, I am chilling out. This is my off day. I'm chilling. I've had breakfast. I've had, like, some drinks already. But we're chilling out, man. And this, we got a lot of shit to kind of get into. So let me turn this down. As a matter of fact, let me turn that off. But yeah, man, we got a lot of stuff to get into, man. It's a lot of things that I got on the docket. But before I do, of course, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with us here at the Spann Report Podcast. Let your voice be heard, man. Go ahead and hit up that hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Let me hear those voicemail messages. And, of course, I'll play those messages here live on the show and respond in kind. You can also email me here at feedback@thespannreport.com. That's feedback@thespannreport.com. Send me those emails. And, of course, I'll reply to those emails here live on the show as well. Go ahead and follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr. _Spann, so go ahead, follow your boy there. You can also hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. Did I say that? Follow me on Twitter and Instagram, man. Chop it up with your mans throughout the week. Leave those iTunes and or Stitcher reviews, man. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read on the show. It's one way of you putting down for the show, man. Let everybody know that you rock with us here at the Spare Report Podcast. And it's, you know, it doesn't cost you anything, man. But if you do want to spend some money, not only can you donate to the show, and you can hit that donate tab on any of the episodes that we have here on the Spare Report or Beer and Chicken Podcast, but you can also hit up our store, right? You can go to the Spare Report Podcast Network store on tpublic.com and buy yourself a shirt, buy yourself a phone case, buy yourself a coffee mug, get your swag on, man, with the Spare Report Podcast Network gear over at the tpublic.com website, man. Real talk, just type in the Spare Report Podcast Network and you will find all of our items there, right? And for all of your Spare Report needs, go to www.thesparereport.com. Everything's available there. You can go there, vote in the polls. You can vote in the post. You can watch replays of the show. You can leave comments. You can do pretty much everything. Watch old replays of the show. Every episode is available there. Go there for all of your SpareReport.com needs, man. Real talk. Now, I'm going to switch things up a little bit because we've kind of gone to doing the show once a week. You know, before we were doing the show twice a week, and now we're doing it, you know, once a week. Of course, we got the Beer and Chicken Podcast thing going, but I want to switch this up a little bit, right? Before, I would do like the listener feedback towards the end of the show, right? And what I wanted to start doing now is start getting into the listener feedback a little bit earlier in the show, so you guys can go ahead and get your I know some of you guys, you're sending the feedback, you're like, yo man, I really want to get to the feedback. And some of y'all, I was doing that shit on purpose. I'll leave it at the end of the show, right? But we're gonna kind of go into getting to some of this listener feedback. So let me go. I know we did some polls. We did the polls last week. Let me go to this to the website, and I thought I had this pulled up. Damn it, Span. Damn it, man. All right, let's see. Let's go to the results of some of these polls here. And we had the last poll, I believe it was about the Ziggy Cup. Whether or not ladies would use the Ziggy Cup as part of their sexual repertoire as far as having sex while they were on their periods. And the question was, on the last episode of the Spare Report Podcast, which was episode 200, it cost you nothing to shut the fuck up. It says, ladies, is the Ziggy Cup something you would consider using? And the answers were, maybe. Hell yeah, I've been waiting on this. And nah, I can wait till my period is over, and his ass can too. And, well, okay, where are the results? Come on. All right. And so the results of this poll here are actually a little bit closer than I would have thought. All right. So the hell yeah, I've been waiting on this. 14.2% of listeners of the Spare Report say, yeah, the ladies are like, yo, I've been waiting on this. This is my jam. Right. Now we have a tie. Okay. That sucked. That sucked ass. But we had a tie between maybe and that nigga can wait, and so can I. We had a tie. It was 42.8% for both of those, right? I just forgot that, like, we're broadcasting live on thespareport.com as well. So, like, that's where that feedback was coming from, and I totally forgot about that. But yeah, that's where that came from. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, those poll results were actually a little bit closer than I would have expected for the Ziggy Cup, man. Real talk. And we also had an email, and this email, let me pull this up. This email here comes in from where is it? Leslie. And Leslie wrote in, as a matter of fact, Leslie wrote in, and she said really simply, like, awesome, thanks, that this episode was episode 200 was awesome, and I appreciate that, Leslie. But I also want to shout out Leslie, because she let me know, she was the person who actually let me know that, like, yo, the audio clips from last week where you couldn't hear anything, like, she was the first person to hit me up, like, yo man, we can't hear none of this shit you responded to right now, like, we can't hear none of that. And so I had to re-edit and re-release episode 200, and, like, yo, she's the MVP for that one, man. Y'all need to give her the dap and all the praises and everything else for getting into your man's band. Like, yo, man, that shit don't sound good, right? So appreciate you, Leslie, for writing in. And that was our listener feedback for this week, right? Now, I did have a random thought to get started with this today's show, man. Now, one of the things about, you know, we've been seeing a lot of, like, beefs on social media when it comes to, like, the restaurants, right? The restaurants be getting it in, whether or not it's Wendy's talking shit about McDonald's, whether McDonald's is talking shit about Burger King. They all kind of going in. It's kind of like some friendly ribbon and everything. Wendy's then dropped a fucking mixtape and shit. They dissing everybody. Now, one thing I've been thinking about, I've been thinking about this a lot, man. I roll past a lot of Taco Bells when I'm at work or whatnot, and I'm trying to figure out for the life of me, like, I cannot understand how in the fuck did Wendy's allow for Taco Bell to beat them into getting the breakfast menu, man. Like, how the hell did that happen? How do you allow for Taco Bell to beat you to having breakfast? Can you guys imagine, like, you know, Wendy's does this thing where they got the single, the double, and the triple, nigga. How about, like, a triple sausage croissant sandwich, nigga? Like, that shit would be butter, nigga, but, like, some motherfucking, like, what's that? Like, some, like, something special with some eggs, man. I don't know. Like, maybe, maybe not. I can't even think of anything that may sound good outside of, like, maybe, like, the triple croissant with sandwich, man, with the sausage patties, man. Because, like, it's never frozen, right? That's their big thing. Like, it's never flash frozen. We got all our shit is fresh, nigga. So, I've been wondering about that. Like, and not only that, when it comes to Taco Bell's breakfast menu, how many of y'all are really out here clamoring for the Taco Bell, like, fried egg taco shell? You know what I'm saying? Like, that was something, I don't know, man. It just seemed like something not a whole lot of people was really, wasn't really asking for that. But Taco Bell gave it to us. Maybe it was something that we didn't know we needed. I've never had it. You know, I'm not real big on the fried eggs either, though. That's the thing. I think that's what it is. Like, egg whites don't really excite me, man. All the flavor is in the yolk of the egg, man. Like, egg whites have a funny texture to them. And it's funny because, like, I like boiled eggs and shit, or, like, deviled eggs and stuff. Like, I like that. But, like, yo, you got to put some salt and pepper on them egg whites, man, in order for them to taste like anything. And the texture of those egg whites ain't really like, it's got a funny texture to it. So, yeah, man. Taco Bell beat Wendy's to a breakfast menu. I don't even know if Wendy's is really even thinking about coming out with a breakfast menu, but they probably should, man. Like, they already got the Baconator. Like, come on, man, y'all good at bacon. How can you be good at bacon and not have a breakfast menu? How is that even possible? Why don't we have, like, a sausage burrito or something like that from y'all? Like, even McDonald's is doing burritos. Come on, bro. Come on, Wendy's. Now, I get it. Like, sometimes you don't really want your fast food restaurants to start having a little bit of everything. And McDonald's is kind of that place, right, where McDonald's food years ago, long time ago, McDonald's used to be all right. Right? McDonald's used to be all right. Now McDonald's got a little bit of every fucking thing. They doing coffee, they doing smoothies, they doing chicken wraps, they doing like salads, they doing fucking hamburgers. They got a little bit of everything, and it's like, you know, jack of all trades, master of nothing when it comes to McDonald's, right? So yeah, man, maybe Wendy's is on to something by not doing it, but I'm just saying, I'll be the first to say, nigga, I'll be in line when they finally decide to do a breakfast menu, man. Real talk, I think Wendy's got the potential to have a really good breakfast menu, and I hate that they let Taco Bell beat them to it, man. That was one of the random thoughts I just had in my head. I'm like, you know, maybe because I'm hungry. I'm always hungry, man. Yeah. So we got that, man. Now, we haven't had one of these in a little bit. As a matter of fact, the last time we had one of these, Tariq Nasheed had dropped a song, It's Time, and folks found it pretty catchy. I found it like to be a bit of a Alexander O'Neal knockoff-ish kind of thing, but folks really enjoyed it, right? So we haven't done this since then, but yo, y'all know what time it is, right? In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk right, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special Hotep unit. These are their stories. All right, now, y'all know last week we talked a lot about Killer Mike. Right. And Killer Mike went on NRA TV and he pretty much disparaged the March for Our Lives. He disparaged the kids who were advocating for some, you know, forms of gun control. He disparaged allies, right? Like the allyship. And then on top of it, he had to roll his back, right? He had to come out and issue apologies and everything else. And it's weird because his apologies were those of, like, he was apologizing for everything but what he did. You know what I'm saying? Like, I apologize that adults did this to you guys, as if he wasn't said adult that was also a part of doing that to these kids. So it was, you know, it's one of those things where, like, yo, he said this thing, he had to come back and backtrack on it. And, like, Killer Mike has, like, been taking a shit ton of heat because of the things that he said. And he's taking heat right even here on this show, right? But Of course, there's always a contingent of niggas who feel like even when you're apologizing, you still need to be defended, despite the fact that you acknowledge that some wrong happened on your end, right? So we get this video, and this is from some dude who calls himself Hotep Jesus, my nigga. Yes, this nigga's name is Hotep Jesus, dog. So let me make sure you guys can check this out right along with me, man. Let me pull up the screen share really quick so you guys can watch this here right along with your boy. And let's indulge in this fuckery together. Now, this video is, I believe it's like 9 minutes long. We're not going to watch the entire 10-minute video of this shit. But we just want to like kind of delve into some of the shit that the Hotep Jesus found himself defending Killer Mike on. So here we go.
Liberals and black liberals have been attacking my homie Killer Mike because Killer Mike is out here telling the truth. The, how do you say, raw and uncut truth. The evil left controls us all.
All right, now, bit of context. He's already coming out talking about liberals and black liberals and liberal whatever. Like, he's got this disdain for quote-unquote liberal people, right? These are the same motherfuckers who found themselves in an alliance with the alt-right. The alt-right who wants absolutely nothing to do with your black ass. These dudes found themselves in an alliance with the alt-right. This dude was on video, on YouTube, talking about an alliance with the alt-right. The alt-right and the Hotep's coming together. So I just want to give you guys a little bit of context as to why this dude is already off top talking shit about liberal people. Excuse me.
Are y'all ready? Hit the retweet button on this. We about to go. We about to get in. We about to chop this thing up.
Not really.
First of all, let's talk about Killer Mike being on NRA TV. NRA does not need to be pro-black. They're pro-Second Amendment. That's their mission statement.
Okay, so if you're pro-Second Amendment and a black person is also pro-Second Amendment, then damn it, you should be advocating for black rights also, not just when they apply to white people. That is people's beefs with the NRA, but okay.
Pro-Second Amendment. Why every time something happens in the black community, y'all asking for everybody to speak up? Words ain't gonna change shit. Words ain't gonna change shit. If the NRA spoke up for Philando Castile, what would have changed?
Here's the thing. The NRA is a very powerful lobbying group. They have a lot of Republican politicians in their pocket. And those Republican politicians control legislation that also has something to do with the gun rights in this country. Right? If the NRA was to come out and lean on the fact that, say, for instance, Philando Castile's gun rights, that if Philando Castile's rights had been respected and the NRA was willing to help fight for Philando Castile's rights with the money and the lobbying power that they wield, then damn it, they do have some, they do have a semblance of power when it concerns black people and Black Lives Matter or whatever. What the NRA has chosen to do is racially segregate when they are going to apply said pressure. And that is people's beefs with the NRA, because the NRA presents themselves as a civil rights organization while turning their backs on an actual civil rights incident. This is people's issues with the NRA. It's not just words when it comes to the NRA. The NRA not only uses words, but it also uses money and uses power and influence in order to get shit done. And the NRA lifted not one finger to help a black legal gun owner in an instance where their civil rights were being violated.
George Zimmerman killed one of our own and we have done nothing. We have done nothing. We lost a brother who got shot in his backyard over the past few weeks. We lost another brother over some bombs or something in Austin, right? We have done nothing as a community of black people, yet we're always looking for people outside of our community to talk for.
All right, so when do you plan on doing anything? Right? There's this thing where, like, there's a lot of people on, like, especially like when we start talking about like the social justice movement, and we start having like black people who are critical of the social justice movement, and they really use the term social justice warrior as if that's some sort of like insult to people. Like, one of the things about that is like, yo, they're usually coming from a group of motherfuckers who aren't really planning on doing anything about the problem either. They notice that there is a problem, but they're also waiting for someone else to solve said problem. And then when they find people who are out here articulating what the problem is, they're like, okay, well, what are you gonna do about it? Well, if you also feel like this is a problem, then what are your plans to help us eradicate said problem, as opposed to shitting on the people who are articulating the problem, bringing attention to the problem, and trying to make sure that the problem does not become swept under the rug and that everybody's aware of it. Like, this is the thing that a lot of people on the right, a lot of people who, or especially like black male critics of BLM or the Black Lives Matter movement or whatever, like, they tend to have this thing where like they're critical of the movement, and yet they don't really have a whole hell of a lot of solutions to bring forth to help eradicate the things that are happening. They do a lot of talking, not a whole lot of problem solving.
Us. Another thing, these goddamn celebrities donating to the march or whatever. You gotta remember, celebrities are not educated people, right? These are not educated people. These are people that know music. Like, they know how to entertain, and that's what they do. So when you,
so what about Killer Mike? Is he included in this? Like, is Killer Mike included in this list of celebrities? Is he not someone who's like musically inclined? Is he not someone who like knows how to entertain people? Like, we're also seeing right now with Killer Mike that, like, yo, he had to apologize for what he said. Did he not fuck up publicly? Did he not know that maybe going to the NRA TV was probably not the smartest thing to do? He's already got like even some hoteps like Tariq Nasheed saying, nah, man, you played yourself with that one. But okay.
You're looking at entertainers to say some educated shit, you're not gonna find it. Killer Mike is one of the few people that's actually educated on the matters that we can listen to.
Oh, okay. So he's a special one. He's a special one. Although he had to apologize, but okay.
But y'all listen to these celebrities who like...
That Killer Mike is.
Killer Mike says celebrities don't know what to do. They're told what to do.
And Killer Mike apologized.
Right. And the thing is, celebrities are worried about their PR and their PR image and what they're going to look like when they take on certain topics. And
maybe that's why Killer Mike apologized.
Media, and they say if they're pro-gun control, then everybody's going to cancel them, right? The black liberal media is going to drag them, right? This is what happens. So we got to stop looking for celebrities and look to your goddamn self, your own common sense. So let's unpack this thing.
You can't unpack a brown paper bag, dog. You're not really carrying around a whole lot.
We talked about NRA doesn't need to be pro-black. Mike being on NRA TV, people are saying that it's an issue with Killer Mike being on NRA TV talking with the NRA. Well, guess what? NRA is the largest organization, the largest proponent of the Second Amendment.
Now, you just said that the NRA didn't have to really say anything when it concerned black people, not even 3 minutes ago. Not even 3 minutes ago. So the NRA doesn't have to be pro-black, but the NRA is also one of the largest gun rights advocate organizations in the world. Yet they don't have to say anything about black gun ownership. Okay. This is the same motherfucker who found himself talking about an alliance with the hoteps and the alt-right. Right?
This is what they're known for. This is their mission. And it only makes sense that he should connect with them.
Why, when there's so many black organizations who are about the same thing, as a matter of fact, are more specifically, who are actually more specific in their target, who are more specific in their advocacy when it comes to black gun ownership, which was the issue that he was supposed to be on there talking about in the first place. If you're going to talk about black gun ownership, then why not talk to a group of black gun owners or a black gun ownership advocacy group, as opposed to a group who has shown time and again that they don't give a fuck about your gun ownership rights? Why is this such a hard thing to fucking fathom?
They said, why not other pro-black groups? Well, the other pro-black groups don't have the reach, right?
They're They don't have the reach, but the NRA does, which is why black people who are for the Second Amendment, who own guns, would like to see a group like the NRA with said influence, with said Republican, with said legislators in their pocket, with said lobbying influence, to advocate for the civil rights of black gun owners to be respected. It's not that hard a motherfucking leap. It's not that hard a leap to expect for the NRA to be like that. Now, we know that the NRA isn't like that, but the NRA should be like that, and it isn't. And the vast majority of gun owners who are NRA members, me formally, who are NRA members, are for vast amounts of different gun, types of gun control, whether that be background checks, whether that be waiting periods, whether that be mental health checks, whether that be trigger locks, whether that be, all sorts of different things, whether or not you believe that you shouldn't be able to own an AR-15. Now, I don't necessarily agree with that one, but yo, there are people who believe that, right? So there's a lot of people. There's a lot of people within the gun ownership community who have a lot of different nuanced thoughts about gun ownership, especially black gun ownership, right? The NRA is the last place that you would really need to go in order to have that discussion, especially considering the fact that we know that the NRA is being disingenuous, and even Killer Mike had to say that they were being disingenuous by playing that video at a time when the March for Our Lives was going on. He said that, right? Now, he had this thought, Killer Mike had this thought, that because he was on there, that they wouldn't use that for March for Our Lives. And he said someone over at NRA TV got cute, right? So the fact that you got this nigga on here talking about, yo, I'm going to defend Killer Mike and the NRA and all these other things, man, it just goes to show you that, like, yo, it's a lot of hotepy ass motherfuckers that don't really know what the hell's going on. I'll say this, not even that they don't know what's going on, that they know what's going on, they don't care, because, again, some of these hoteps want to replace white supremacy, white male supremacy, with themselves. And some of them will even try to use an alliance with said alt-right white supremacists in a way to try to get themselves to that point, right? This dude being one of them. So, yeah, man, that has been special hotep unit.
In the black community, pseudo-consciously based offenses are considered especially heinous. In the Yonk right, the dedicated misogynists who perpetuate frauds are members of an elite squad known as a special hotep unit. These are their stories.
All right, man. So, yeah, we starting off with a little bit of craziness, right? Now, we got a lot of stuff to get into. We got a lot of craziness to get into. And, of course, when we start talking about the craziness, we got to...
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right. So, how many of you believe, right? How many of you believe that women should not have the right to vote, man? Like, is that a thing that is, like, is that something that, like, people are really talking about? Like, women shouldn't have the right to vote in 2018. Is there, like, a lot of Span Report podcast listeners who believe that? No? Okay. Just checking the room, right? So, I came across this video, man. This is actually something that, like, I thought was fucking weird. There's a woman who believes that women in America should not have the right to vote. Now, this is on Viceland. I want to say they're associated with Vice. It's one of those things, like, you know, Viceland, Vice, I don't know, but they're on YouTube, right? And they have, of course, this young white woman who believes that women should not have the right to vote, man. So, of course, like I always do, we got to share this with the fam, right? So let me pull this video up. Let me share this with you guys. Let's do this here. All right, so let's check her out.
Hello. Jen Molly.
Hi.
Nice to meet you. Come on in.
How you doing, ma'am?
I am very well.
How you doing, sir?
Very well, and you?
I'm all right. How you doing?
Good.
They're in like a hotel or something.
You came for like the event.
I came for the event. Yeah, I'm here for the women's conference.
And this woman is wearing a feminism is cancer t-shirt.
Feminist, is there? Those aren't synonyms. I think it's absolutely cancer. It started out as cancer.
Her name is Janet Bloomfield. Janet Bloomfield believes that women should not have the right to vote, and she believes that feminism is cancer.
And
you think even like the first wave sort of suffragette sort of like right to vote was cancer?
I don't think that women should have the right to vote, frankly. God.
That's madness.
That is not madness.
And I appreciate that's your views.
That's not madness. Do you want to sit down and I'll explain
to
you?
Oh my God. So I meet all these different groups of people.
So this is like sort of a stand-up thing going on here.
You know, and they've got different degrees of how much they don't like the ideas of feminism. But there is some sort of like reasoned debate about it. But this next woman I met called Janet Bloomfield is anti-feminist. She is anti-woman, God, that. She thinks women shouldn't vote. Yeah, fuck yeah. No vote. That's crazy. Not letting women vote. Of course you let women vote. We just don't count them after, right, guys?
Okay.
In 1971, it lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. Mm-hmm. And it was passed right at the end of the Vietnam War. The average age of a combat soldier was 19.
If you're old enough to die for your country, you're old enough to vote for your
country.
That's
right. That should have instantly triggered the 19th Amendment. Women are not drafted. Women do not pay a blood price.
If you ask me, should women be allowed to vote? I say yes.
I have never been to war. I have never been drafted. Does that also mean that I shouldn't have the right to vote because I've never been to war and that I've never been drafted? And we also right now have all volunteer military service. Everybody who's in the military right now is in that military because they chose to be, not because they were forced to be there. And there's a special sort of thing where, like, you know, you kind of want people who want to be there as opposed to the people who are like forced to be there. They're not really going to fight all that hard. I mean, they may fight when, you know, their life is on the line and they'll have some very selfish reasons. Like, yo, man, I'm just trying to get the fuck home, man. Fuck all this other shit. Like, I just want to go home. I don't even really want to be here. It's a whole different thing where you have that sort of person out there as opposed to the person like, yo, man, I chose to be out here. I want this fight. I want to get in some ass, man. I want this. It's a whole different thing. But her thing was women shouldn't have the right to vote, or especially in considering where she's talking about, you know, when she's talking about the vote was given to 18-year-olds and it was right after the Vietnam War. There are women who are serving in the armed forces right now who are combat veterans. They should still have the right to vote, right? Right? You would think, according to this lady's logic.
Because why?
Because I don't break it down. I say as a citizen of a country.
Yeah, women don't pay taxes.
Of course women pay taxes.
No, they don't pay tax. Because when you take the balance, here's the amount of tax I paid versus here's the government services I took. Effectively, only men pay tax.
But women do pay tax. If a woman's wage, money comes out of that woman's wage.
One-year-olds who have trust funds, they also have to pay tax. Do they get to vote?
Yeah, but they're not. But that's a one-year-old. You know what I'm saying?
What's the difference? I'm asking women, you to define that. I'm not a purist about anything other than I think that violence is the only truth. And since I am not the one who is going to have to use violence to solve problems, I don't have a right to make that choice for other people. And neither do any other women.
Yeah, is you into this type of stuff, Leo?
We argue a little bit about the details
this. That's understandable.
And I poke fun at the fact that she has an untrained mind, so she uses words that sometimes can be loaded.
Yeah.
Right?
Whoa. But more...
She just like giggled
more
at
or less, yeah. I would agree.
Yeah.
There are
She's
some
an untrained mind.
Mm. So what's going on today? What am I going to see today?
Well, I think I am going to go down to the women's conference.
And you're going to be doing interviews on the street, or...?
I'm a little bit...
Nervous?
Nervous about it, yeah.
Why? I see you got a tactical pen.
Yes, yes. Lauren Southern...
Because a lot of people don't know what that is, but it's a self-defense pen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because when I was invited on International Women's Day, there were promises to throw acid in my face.
Gee, I wonder why.
I think this is ridiculous. If you can't refute my argument with ideas and with better ideas and all you have is acid, you've lost. But on the
other... I'm pretty sure there are like thousands upon thousands of ideas that are a lot better than what you're proposing right now. But it's that thing, man, where like, so long as I don't agree with it, it's not a good idea, right? And we become like that to a certain degree, man. Like, yo, there are so many people in the world who will, like, in the face of consensus, in the face of common sense, in the face of logic, in the face of common decency, will still be like, yo, I still like my idea better than all of y'all shit, and I don't give a fuck, right? And that's where this lady is with her shit right now, pretty much.
On the other hand, I'd like to keep my face. I'm not real thrilled about... Now, I don't think anything's going to happen here.
Fair enough. Ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Let's go.
Are you ready, to go? Leo?
Yep.
Yeah, but you've been ready to go, isn't it? You've been sort of been like, hurry the hell up. Okay, you first.
Thank you.
It's all right. I shall go on your side.
All right. So, yeah, man.
See, that's toxic masculinity right there.
That was oh, my God. Okay, yeah. We got to stop that. But, yeah, man. A woman who doesn't believe that women should have the right to vote. So, I'm going to leave that as a question. I'm going to put that as a poll question on this man report. Just to see what you guys think on that, man. What do you think about this lady who believes that women should not have the right to vote, man? I'm going to put that as a poll question on thespanreport.com on episode 201. That'll be the poll question for you guys to go ahead and let your voice be heard that way, man. Real talk. We got another story here, man. This here comes out of, let's see. Let me pull this back. And this story here comes out of, this is the Salt Lake Tribune. And it says, a woman said an AncestryDNA.com DNA test told her that she had a different father, her parents' fertility doctor.
Well, that'll be a monkey's bare-assed uncle.
All right. So it says, when Kelly Rowlett received the results from a DNA sample she had sent to a popular genealogy website, she assumed that there had been a mistake. The test showed that her DNA matched a sample from a doctor more than 500 miles away. And though she had never heard of him, AncestryDNA.com predicted a parent-child relationship between the two. Said at the time, Rowlett was not aware that more than 36 years ago, her parents had struggled to conceive. She did not know her mother had undergone artificial insemination, nor did she or her parents know that the mother's fertility doctor had allegedly used his own sperm to get her pregnant with Rowlett. The account comes from a lawsuit filed last week in U.S. District Court in Idaho. In it, Rowlett accused Gerald E. Mortimer, a now retired obstetrician gynecologist in Idaho Falls, of fraud and medical negligence, among other things. Mortimer could not immediately be reached for comment, and it's not clear whether he has an attorney. In the early 1980s, Rowlett's parents, Howard Fowler and Sally Ashby, were married and living in Idaho Falls, not far from the Wyoming border. The pair were having a hard time conceiving. Mortimer, an OBGYN, diagnosed Fowler with a low sperm count and Ashby with a tipped uterus, in which the uterus tilts upward towards the spine, according to the lawsuit. The doctor recommended that Ashby undergo a procedure in which she would be inseminated with sperm from her husband and an anonymous donor who matched the couple's specifications, the lawsuit states. The couples requested a donor who was in college and taller than 6 feet with brown hair and blue eyes, and Mortimer told him that he had found a donor matching their description, the suit says. But the lawsuit claims that when Mortimer performed the procedure in summer 1980, he used his own sperm. He did not match the couple's specifications. Now, interestingly enough, man, like I kind of wonder, like, how prevalent is this thing? Right. This isn't the first time that we've heard of a fertility doctor using his own sperm in order to inseminate thousands of women, hundreds of women with his own sperm. And he's got kids all over the place. And these people are none the wiser. Excuse me. And I kind of wonder with AncestryDNA.com and with 23andMe.com. And there's even another one. I think African Ancestry is another one where folks are using or putting in like these DNA results or whatever, and they're submitting the DNA to try to find out what their lineages are. And, you know, like, I wonder how many more cases like this we're going to see going forward, because people are becoming more aware of these types of services. Like, I got my DNA tested with AncestryDNA.com last year. It was only like $60, man. Like, before it was like $100. Like, I remember at one point it was damn near $200 in order to get the test done. And now the cost of it is coming down, and more people are getting it done. I know my grandmother still wants me to, like, you know, kind of get hers done. So, like, it's a thing that people are becoming more and more aware of. I do wonder, man, like, how many of these doctors were out here doing this? Because this isn't the first time that we've heard of a doctor inseminating a patient with his own sperm and having children as a result of it, right? And I think the biggest, I guess, I think the biggest thing, like, he didn't meet their specifications. Like, he maybe not over 6 feet, maybe he wasn't brown eye, you know, brown hair, blue eyes sort of thing. Like, I don't know. Another thing too that I got questions about was like whether or not, okay, they say the father or what she would have thought was her biological father had a low sperm count. But you're doing artificial insemination. Why would they then need the sperm from another donor? Right. This is one of the things that I would, and probably out of my own ignorance, right? Like, why would this be a thing that somebody else needs to do? Like, yo, although I may have a low sperm count, I get killed during the transmission of trying to impregnate my wife. But if we're doing artificial insemination, and like, is it like in vitro? You know what I mean? I wonder if that's what it was. Like, it's a little bit different than in vitro, where like they take the sperm and they take the egg and they fertilize it and then they implant it. Like, I wonder if it's something different from that. I'm not really sure how that entire procedure plays out, but I wonder if it's something similar or different than that as to why they didn't choose to use her father's, quote unquote, her father's sperm in order to impregnate her mom. But yeah, man, that's crazy that we have yet another story of a doctor, an OBGYN, who is artificially inseminating a woman with his own sperm. Man, this is a crazy thing. Now, another story that we got here in Blue Blazes, man, is actually kind of like almost fucked up. Almost as fucked up. Damn it, it's tragic, man. So there was a Detroit man who was shot and killed live on Instagram, man. So we're going to, let me pull this up so you guys can check this out along with me here, man. And why is my screen black? Oh, there we go. Let me pull this up and you guys can watch along with me here. Let's do this. All right. So check this out.
It was just such a heartbreaking case. The mother of the victim, Dylan Hemphill, absolutely believes this was an accident. And so does the mother of the teen who pulled the trigger inside this house. But that certainly does not mean he won't be charged with a felony.
Seems surreal right now. I'm shocked. Very shocked.
Chantel Hemphill says the fact that her 18-year-old son, Dylan, has been shot to death doesn't even seem real. And the young man who called 911 to say he did it was one of Dylan's best friends.
They're close friends. They like brothers. I mean, I treated DeJuan like he was a son of mine.
It happened around midnight in this house on San Juan near McNichols on Detroit's west side. Chantel says her son was hanging out with his buddy who lives here with his family. Detroit police say it appears Dylan and his friend were live on Instagram showing money and a gun when Dylan's friend accidentally pulled the trigger. We're told that friend called 911 and described a horrific scene.
As far as I know, him and his friend was playing with a rifle. And I guess the gun went off and hit Dylan in the back of the head.
It hurt me. It hurt me bad, you know. I broke down, you know. It's my nephew. It hurts, you know. 18 years old. He just began to live.
Chantel says her son was fun-loving and he was looking for a job now that he had graduated from Job Corps.
Shouldn't happen to anybody. I hear about stuff like this every day. Never thought it would happen to me.
Now this mother's message to others.
Just don't play with loaded guns or things that don't belong to you, that you don't know how to handle.
And Dylan's friend, the 18-year-old suspected shooter, remains under arrest as police prepare to turn their findings over to the prosecutor. We will certainly keep you updated. Reporting live on Detroit's West Side, Kimberly Craig, 7 Action News.
All right. So, yeah, man. You know, one of the things about, you know, This is one of the reasons why, you know, the gun debate is so contentious, is so passionate. You know, like folks on both ends of the spectrum, look, like reasonable people on both ends of the spectrum will look at that and have empathy and remorse for what happened to that family and that mom. Losing her son at 18, you know, no one ever wants to like hear a story like that. Not even like a responsible gun owner, no, especially someone who doesn't necessarily believe that you should own guns. It's fucked up. It was irresponsible. It was reckless. It was tragic. You know, like I said, to lead into it, it was a tragic thing for that to happen, man. Another thing about this, man, is the social media aspect of it, where so many kids find themselves pretending to be people who they are not for the, you know, for social media, right? You know, they're flashing guns and money. You know, I don't know if these kids were drug dealers or not. Probably not. I would lean towards probably not. I don't know if these kids are out in the streets like that. I would venture, I don't know them, but I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt to say no, they probably weren't. But the idea of, you know, flaunting guns, flaunting money, I've never been a fan of it. I've never been, like, every time I see a video of someone, like, with a gun and they're, like, kind of handling the gun recklessly, I'm always cringing at that. When people are taking pictures with guns, like, I've had friends, man, like, that will put, like, pictures up on Instagram and they'll have a gun with them. And, like, I'm looking at, like, things like, yo, man, are you executing trigger discipline and all this other stuff, like keeping your finger off of the trigger, never pointing that thing at anything you're not willing to like lose or destroy. I look at things like that and I've been on, you know, I'm like the friend where like, yo, here this nigga go, you know what I'm saying? But it's to keep shit like this sort of thing from happening, right? Where like, yo, like there's no reason in the world for this young man to not be here other than the stupidity of posing with a loaded rifle and showing off for your friends on Instagram. It's nothing that anybody wants to happen. It's nothing that anybody wants to happen, man. And I feel sorry for this young man's parents. I feel sorry for his family, man. And both of them, even the young kid who shot him, I'm sure he's looking at it like his life is fucking over. Right? He's probably going to go to jail. His life is wrecked. He lost his best friend. His best friend is no longer here. And, you know, it's a fucked up thing to have to like kind of watch and kind of like, you know, listen to. It's really not. It's just fucked up all around, man. And I hate that, you know, this sort of story, you know, these sort of things happen with people being reckless and careless with firearms, right? Way too many people being reckless and careless with firearms. And this is why, as a responsible gun owner, that I don't necessarily mind when there are certain restrictions that are put on gun ownership and the access to certain firearms. Like, I'm not against all of it, right? But, yeah, man, that's just fucked up. But, yeah, that has been What in Blue Blazes?
What in Blue Blazes is going on out here? Did this nigga just say Blue Blazes?
All right, so let's move away from some of that, man, and get to some get to our news, man. Where's my news break? All right. Today in the news, man, Oklahoma teachers have been going on strike, right? And rightfully so, man. Our teachers in America are not being paid in the ways in which they should be. There's a lot of underpaid teachers, a lot of teachers who are coming out of their own pockets to get school supplies for their students, a lot of teachers who are working second and third jobs as Uber drivers or maybe waitressing at an Applebee's or something like that, because the teaching job doesn't pay all the bills, right? Nowhere near what the teaching job should be. And so Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon said the teachers are on strike are like teenagers who want a better car. Now, I don't really feel like I should have to tell y'all what kind of political party she's affiliated with, but I believe it begins with an R, right? So let's see. It says teachers going on strike to demand a salary increase are like a teenager wanting a better car, according to Oklahoma Governor Mary Fallon. Fallon, who made the comments in an interview with CBS News on Tuesday, as thousands of teachers across Oklahoma and Kentucky launched strikes demanding better pay. Around 300,000 teachers in Oklahoma took part in a walkout that began on Monday and that organizers have said will last until a salary increase is agreed to. But the state's Republican governor appeared to have little sympathy for the teachers, telling CBS teachers want more, but it's kind of like a teenager wanting a better car. The average teacher in Oklahoma owns $45,000 a year, with VOA reporting that the state is among the lowest paying in the U.S. for educators. And Fallon's offer to teachers of a 15% to 18% raise was rejected ahead of the walkout as not enough, with the largest teachers union in the state asking for a $10,000 increase over the next 3 years. In addition, teachers are also demanding an increase in state education funding of $75 million and what they say will provide a better deal for the students they teach, while the salary increase they have requested comes as many claim they are forced to take on additional work to supplement their teacher's salary. Now, one of the things that's really interesting about, you know, like politically, one of the things that's really interesting about this entire thing is, man, like they talk about, you know, like Republicans pretty much run the country, right? You got a lot of Republican states. You got a lot of states who have Republican governorships. I think the vast majority of states in America have Republican governors. They have Republican legislatures, whether that be the state House of Representatives, whether that be your state Senate. Like, they are led by Republican legislatures. And a lot of these Republican states, they have implemented a lot of tax cuts, right? And, you know, the vast majority of civilians, you know, people who are taxpayers, someone like myself, a lot of people would say, like, yo, man, like, I'm tired of the government, like, always in my pocket, man. Like, they get way too much money. They get, like, I've said this, right? I come home with probably about 60% of my wages. I bring home about 60% of what I actually earn, right? That's how much I bring home. But the thing of it is that, like, in a lot of these states, man, they've reduced the taxes so low to where they can't generate the revenue to actually pay the bills for said teachers or said road repair or said whatever state service that you're supposed to have that, you know, you look up and you're like, well, we don't have the funding for that. Like, you look at Michigan when it comes to the infrastructure in Flint. Tax money should have been able to maintain that system to where Flint wouldn't have had to turn to the Flint River as opposed to using the safer water from the Detroit Water Department, right? You know, you look at the piping in that system, like the tax dollars should have been already allocated towards the maintenance and the repair of those piping, you know, of those pipes, right? So you look at something that's going on in Oklahoma where the teachers, and even in Kentucky where the teachers are asking for better wages, they're asking for better health care, they're asking for better benefits. And it's because, like, yo, they have to supplement their income with other jobs because this job that they have, excuse me, which is actually one of the more valuable jobs that the country should have, right? Like, they're charged with educating the youth of America, right? Now, America always talks about being one of the number, like, we're number one. We're the number one country in the world. Everybody wants to come to America. We're the best in the world. Everybody comes here for opportunity, and they think they can make their dreams come true. And yet the people who are living here, the people who are born here, are subject to subpar education, depending on where they live socioeconomically, right? So if you're living in a poor area, you're not getting the tax dollars allocated to your school district that you should be, because there's not enough people in that area who are well-to-do enough to pay the taxes, right? So they've already cut the taxes for even the well-to-do people. And the well-to-do people are already like, yo, I'm going to just take this extra money that I saved on these taxes and I'm going to pay this private school to educate my kids. I'm not putting them in a public school. Meanwhile, the public schools are here scrapping for the scraps. They're fighting for the scraps in order to educate your kids, right? And a lot of Republican voters aren't even aware that they're doing themselves a disservice by advocating for these lower taxes and things like that, especially when it comes to, yo, we got to educate these kids and we're not paying our teachers enough, right? So you get this thing where these teachers are like, yo, I'm not getting paid enough. I got three jobs. I work as a teacher. I work as an Uber driver. Sometimes I work as a waiter. Like, this is, I can't keep doing this. I can't keep coming out of my own pocket to educate your children. And then the parents, sometimes even the parents get mad when the school sends you a letter in the mail that says, well, you know, because of budget shortfalls, we're going to have to ask you, could you donate toilet paper for the school this semester? Could you donate, like, crayons and pencils and stuff for the school this semester? People get upset, like, I'm paying taxes, this, that, and other. No, you're not paying enough tax. And this is how you get these budget shortfalls. And you're not seeing the benefits of it because, again, the teachers aren't getting paid and your kids aren't being educated. Right? So to have a Republican governor go out of their way to say that, like, yo, these teachers are asking for more money and it's like a teenager asking for a better car is fucking ridiculous, because you know that you could pay them more money if you decided to tax your populace in a fair and equitable way to where these teachers can actually be funded in the way in which they should be. Like, education should be one of our top fucking expenditures when it comes to either the federal or the state government. That should be one of your top expenditures. How much money we're spending on education? How much money are we spending on educating the populace to where they know what they're supposed to know? But when it comes to a lot of Republican, like a lot of the Republican mantra when it comes to education, like, you look at it, if you look at how much we're talking about, like, Republicans, or I would say not even just Republicans, on the right, where they look at more of a religious education as more valuable than having book learning or having, you know, knowledge of logic and science and mathematics and history and things like that. They'll try to, as a matter of fact, they'll even go so far as to try to change the word in the book so that it makes them feel better. Right? You saw that in Texas. They were calling slaves workers, immigrant workers. They tried to change the terminology to make it sound better, right? They want a they want an uneducated populace so that they can continue to flip bullshit over their like they can continue to flip this bullshit over their head. And this is how Donald Trump succeeds. And this is how this is how you get people in very poor areas who believe that a billionaire reality TV star really has their best interest at heart, right? But in this story, it goes on. It says, in addition, teachers are also demanding an increase in state education funding for $75 million and what they say will provide a better deal for the students they teach, while the salary increase that they have requested comes as many claim they are forced to take on additional work to supplement their teacher's salary. As well as writing off the teachers' demands as childish, Governor Fallon also reportedly suggested that anti-fascist group Antifa was involved in the ongoing teachers' protests, claiming that it was among the outside groups that were demonstrating alongside educators. That's not against the law. That's not against the law. It says, talked with OK Governor Mallory Fallon about the Oklahoma teacher strike. She mentioned outside groups with teachers at Capitol. I said, yes, NEA and West Virginia teachers... NEA and West Virginia Teachers Union leaders and Antifa, she added. Did y'all see Antifa at the State House? Reporter Omar Villanfranca tweeted after speaking with Fallon on Oklahoma on Tuesday. So, yeah, man, like, teachers across the country, you got Kentucky teachers that are going on strike. You got West Virginia teachers who are going on strike. And now you got Oklahoma teachers who are going on strike. This is becoming a thing, man, where, like, yo, there are a lot of public service employees, and I would believe teachers are public service employees. They do this for the kids. They do this for the betterment of the country. They do this for the betterment of the future, right? There are laws in the books, mostly led by Republicans, that would fine teachers unions and police unions and fire department unions for going on strike so that they can continue to misuse and mismanage and mistreat these workers. Unions are being gutted across America, man. Like, a lot of these states are becoming right-to-work states. Like, even down south, man, where, like in Alabama, I believe they have a Mercedes-Benz plant. And I believe they were trying to, like, get a union down there. Like, I think the UAW was trying to unionize the workers down there. And those workers at the time, like, they rejected the unionization because they're like, yo, I've never seen this much money in my life. This is great. Like, I've never seen this much money. And what they don't know is, well, they probably do know, but what they're scared is that if they do unionize, and then if the union then starts to demand better treatment, even better than the treatment that you're getting now, that the jobs are going to go away. And you have to wonder about a company who would leave when the benefit of the workers that you have, Like, if the company's like, yo, man, we like y'all, but we ain't really about, we ain't about this treating y'all nice shit. Like, we'll go somewhere else where we can treat the workers worse. Like, you got to worry, you got to kind of wonder about that. Like, so, like, the way in which unions have been demonized across America lately by Republicans, by, you know, people like Donald Trump, you know, like, it's... I hope these teachers succeed, man. Real talk, because if we're going to continue to talk about the United States being the number one country in America, the number one country in the world, and we're number one on all these different things, when our education, we don't even spend I don't even know if we spend a tenth of the monies that we spend on education that we do on fucking the military, right? The military gets money that they ain't even asked for. The military, like, no, we don't really need these tanks, but all right, I guess, right? But we can't keep fucking schools open. We can't keep teachers paid and satisfied with educating our kids, man. It makes no fucking sense whatsoever, man. Another thing that's in the news. So check this out. This isn't really news, man, but yo, 40% of white people think that black people just need to try harder, man. Well, better yet,
that's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
So check this out. We're reading this out of Newsweek.com, and it says 40% of white Americans think that black people should just would be just as well off as white people if they worked harder, according to a new poll from YouGov on Wednesday. YouGov asked a number of questions on what is called racial resentment, one of which centered on whether the respondent agreed with the statement. It's really a matter of some people not trying hard enough. If blacks would only try harder, they would be just as well off as whites. Overall, 35% of respondents agreed, 16% strongly, 19% somewhat with that statement. 28% either neither agreed nor disagreed. 40% of white respondents agreed, 19% strongly, 21% somewhat, that black people just needed to try harder to be equal, while just 18%, 5% strongly, 13% of somewhat, black respondents said the same, according to the YouGov poll. Now, again, this goes into what we were talking about earlier when it comes to education, right? When you don't allow people to be educated in the ways in which they should, when you're not honest with students and you're not honest with the populace about historically where this country has been, where this country is now, and how this country could be going forward, you do a disservice to your populace. There's a lot of people, white people, right now who believe that they are more aggrieved in this country than black people, despite the head start that they had with slavery and with slavery juggernaut in this country and the Industrial Revolution and everything else, right? You have a lot of people in this country who believe that if only black people tried a little bit harder, despite institutional racism, despite redlining, despite, you know, the Tuskegee experiments, like, there's so many different things we can go into, like, despite the killing of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and Medgar Evers, like, just asking to be treated equally got them killed. But all black people really need to do is just try a little bit, just a little bit harder. Yeah, man. That's why I said this isn't even news, man. Like, there's a lot of people out here in America walking around who really believe this bullshit, right? So yeah, that's going on. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about, this is actually one of the reasons why I titled the show what I did, was the fact that Stephen Clark, who was killed in Sacramento, shot in the back, I believe it was 6 or 8 times. He was shot at 20 times by the Sacramento police in his grandmother's backyard. Stephen Clark wasn't exactly, he wasn't really a fan of the Black Lives Matter movement. Not really a fan of, not really a fan of black women, right? And it's it creates a conundrum, right? For a lot of people. Creates a conundrum. And one of the things that I've been noticing over the course of the week, man, like, I've been listening, you know, of course I listen to podcasts more than I listen to radio, right? There's replaced radio for me. And one of the things that I was listening to, man, like, it was a couple of shows that I listened to where they reduced black women's apprehension about demonstrating for Stephen Clark to because he's dating someone outside of his race, right? That's what they did with it. That's what they did with it. And so the thing is with that, like, the thing is with that is like, yo, I kind of wish you niggas weren't so basic. Like, I kind of wish you niggas would have put a little bit more thought into what y'all was saying before y'all decided to get on mics and say that shit. Like, real talk. So, like, again, like, I was talking about the fact that Stephen Clark wasn't exactly a fan of black women. And someone found tweets of Stephen Clark and of his girlfriend and daughter, I mean, the mother of his kids, that were really negative towards black women and towards the Black Lives Matter movement, right? And so this story here, this actually comes out of Sandra Rose. I don't want to really read out of Sandra Rose because I don't want to editorialize them. I don't want to read their editorializing of this, but I do want to read the tweets that that he had, right? So it says, like, he's on Twitter and he's saying, "I don't want nothing black but a Xbox. Dark bitches bring dark days." He says, "I don't want nothing black but an Xbox 100. Black bitches, I don't want nothing black but an Xbox." Like, he kept repeating that, right? This is back in 2015, so like 3 years ago. Then his kid's mom, he's on Twitter also, and his kid's mom, I think she's of Asian descent. She says, "This nigga said, I don't want no black baby. I'm already black. I don't need no black baby." And he responded to that and said, "On God, 100, right? So those were the tweets. Those were the things that people saw. Those were the things that gave people apprehension. Yo, people already demonstrated on behalf of Stephen Clark before they saw this, right? And then black, you know, when this came out, there was a lot of black women who rightfully was like, "Yo, I don't really know if I want to keep doing this on behalf of this guy, right? I don't know if I really want to keep doing this." And so what this did was it led a lot of dudes, a lot of black dudes, to then turn around and say, "Well, what, you want a perfect victim? This is the same thing the white man been doing since Trayvon Martin. Remember when Trayvon Martin, they started trying to find pictures of him and everything else? And they tried to talk about him smoking weed, and they tried to talk about him and his gold teeth. Remember they tried to say that what they did with Tamir Rice and Tamir Rice's daddy being not there and all this other shit to try to justify what happened to him? This is the same thing. This is the same thing." It's not the same thing, dog. It's not the same thing. Because Stephen Clark actually went out of his way to talk about how much he didn't give a fuck about black women and how much he didn't care about black women. He went out of his way to say that publicly. It's not the same thing. And it's ironic that a lot of dudes will walk around telling these black women that they need to advocate for this dude who told him, who told them he didn't give a fuck about them. Right? Now, I said it was a couple podcasts that I had listened to where they pretty much reduced this to the fact that he wanted to date outside of his race. Like, there's a few things with that, man. Like, you can date outside of your race. Like, I know plenty of black women. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to bet that the vast majority of black women don't give a fuck about whether you choose to date interracially or not. Right? Don't give a fuck whether or not, one, because they not trying to fuck you, two, because they don't want you, and three, because they just don't care. It's not their business. Do you enjoy you and your wife and your life? Right? I know a whole lot of black women that don't even give a fuck about this sort of shit. Like, you date interracially, fine. Right? You can date interracially when you're in love with someone and they just happen to be interracial. They're not the same race as you. But when you start dating interracially only because you're doing it to slight your own people or to slight or what you deem as somebody else is better than your own people, then that's when people start having issues with you, right? You look at, say, for instance, the difference between what's going on with, say, Tay Diggs, right? Tay Diggs is out here. He wanted to make sure that everybody knew that his kid was more than just black, that his kid had other ancestry going on with him, that even his mother told him he wasn't going to date no black woman. He was going to marry himself a white woman, right? You look at how Tay Diggs is being received because of his interracial dating, and then you look at someone like, I forget the brother's name, who's Luke Cage, who's also married to a white woman. And people are letting my man cook. He's on super black ass Luke Cage with his white wife, and people are letting him cook. Why? Because he's not making it a point to say, hey, look at my white wife over here. I got me as a white woman over here. I ain't getting nothing but no black woman. I ain't fucking with no black woman. He's very intimate with black women on screen, right? He's not making it a thing where he's not desiring black women. Whereas Tay Diggs will come out and say, nah, I prefer a white woman, right? Get mad at black people because they're like, yo, what you're saying is kind of fucked up, right? You can date whomever you want without antagonizing black women with it. That's what Stephen Clark did, right? Another thing too, man, I want to know how many niggas are out here breaking their necks to help somebody who they know has been talking shit about them. Anybody, like, how many of y'all, man, like, y'all sit up here, y'all talk all this shit. How many of y'all are out here breaking your necks to help a motherfucker that you know don't really fuck with you? Not a whole lot. As a matter of fact, many of them, man, fuck that nigga, man. He a hater, man. That nigga always got some shit to say about me, man. Fuck that nigga. That's exactly how y'all would respond. That's exactly what you would respond to when you find out, like, yo, somebody you thought you was cool with, somebody you thought you could help, and then you find out that they're like, yo, they've been talking cash shit about you. You're like, man, hold up. What am I doing here? I don't have to do this shit for you. I'm good. Like, I can go on, man. All right, you know what? Fuck this whole thing. A lot of sisters have been rightfully taking up that attitude. Like, man, I was ready to ride for you until I found out how you felt about me. Right? Ready to go ride for you until I found out how you felt about me. And so it's interesting to see suddenly all these dudes get up in arms about the fact that, like, yo, it's a lot of sisters, man. It's like, I can't really ride for Stephen Clark on this one. Now, one of the things that's interesting about this entire thing, man, is, you know, you can hate what happened to Stephen Clark. You can also not like the person that Stephen Clark was revealed to be. These things can exist simultaneously. There isn't a mutually exclusive thing about this. They can both exist in the same time and in the same space. Right? There's a lot of people who hate that Stephen Clark was shot 6 times, 8 times in the back by the police. It wasn't warranted. He didn't have enough opportunity to comply with the orders that the police were giving him before they decided they were just going to unload 20 rounds his way. And he died tragically in his grandma's backyard. They didn't even send medical help his way. They like left him in that backyard. I saw that video. They left him in that backyard laying there for a long time before they even decided that they were going to even go over to his body. He was dead when they put handcuffs on him. Right? So you can hate that, but you could also hate what Stephen Clark was perpetuating on social media and his attitude towards black women. And if you got any sense about you, you can understand why black women would kind of step away. Like, you know what? I'm cool on this one. And much the same way that you could say the same thing about Black Lives Matter, saying like, yo, like, although there are some who are still out here fighting the fight for Stephen Clark, and, you know, I don't even know anybody. I don't know anybody who would be mad at them for doing so because of the principle around the situation. Like, they hate what happened to Stephen Clark because it's yet another example of the police overstepping their bounds when it comes to protecting the community and over policing black communities. Right. But at the same time, they're not breaking their necks themselves to be a part of said protest or said demonstration. And it's we like when it comes to brothers who are upset at sisters for deciding that they want to sit out this one because of the ways in which Stephen Clark has expressed himself concerning them. You wonder why they call you trash, bruh. You wonder why they call you trash. Because only a trash ass dude would expect that someone who he's mistreated and spoken ill of is obligated to assist them in their moment and their time when they're most need and they're of most need, right? Whole lot of dudes who believe that no matter how bad they treat the women around them, that when push comes to shove, these same women are supposed to stand up and ride for them. And it's a whole lot. And truth be told, it's a whole lot of brothers who've had their whole lives. And that's exactly what happened. Where despite how shitty they were, black people, black women stood right there alongside them and was ready to ride for them. And it's become an expected thing, right? So now you're expecting the women whom you're mistreating to ride for you, regardless of whether or not you're doing the same, you're mistreating them. And when a woman decides to, like, you know what, I'm out, then suddenly your feelings are hurt. Then suddenly you feel betrayed. Suddenly you're like, what you doing? What you doing? You supposed to ride. Like, you my ride or die. Like, sometimes, man, you can exhaust that capital. You can exhaust how much a woman is willing to put up with when it comes to you and your actions and the way that you comport yourself. Like all of these things, man. All of these things. And it was disappointing to me to like watch or listen to podcasts this week from black people. Dudes. Talking shit about black women about whether or not they decided to step away from Stephen Clark because of what his preference was. It was not about just his preference. It was never about just his preference. And there's a whole lot of niggas who think that just because they date interracially, that black women are ready to like just turn on them because they're not dating a black woman. It's a lot deeper than that. And a lot of you niggas know it's a lot deeper than that. And it just kind of pained me that some of y'all was like so fucking basic in your thinking and getting on these microphones and talking about, yo, they just stepping back because he got a preference for somebody other than black women. Nah, it's like, yo, you can be with whomever the fuck you wish, but you ain't got to talk shit about the women whom with you are not. You don't have to do that. Stephen Clark did that. Stephen Clark did that, right? So you got that going on. But another reason why they call you trash, right? There's another reason why they call you trash. Fabulous was out here acting a motherfucking fool. And he's accused of allegedly beating his longtime girlfriend, Emily B, and knocking out her two front teeth, right? Now, a whole bunch of people were coming to Fabulous's defense, especially on Twitter, man. Twitter, like, it was filled with niggas like, yo, man, I need to hear more of the story, man. I need like video or something. Like, suddenly everybody needs video for these stories, right? And it's interesting to me, man, like, you know, especially when we talk about, like, we've had this story about when we talk about Bill Cosby or when we talk about R. Kelly or when we talk about, I don't know, even taking it back to like Trayvon Martin, right? Like, it's interesting how people pick and choose those with whom they are willing to believe did some fucked up shit and needing video or not needing video and how they believe it, right? So with Trayvon Martin, you got a whole bunch of niggas who know that Trayvon Martin is dead, who know that that George Zimmerman got away with killing him and are upset about it, right? And yet when Emily B comes out and says, well, my teeth were knocked out because of this dude. He's been beating me. And all of a sudden, like, dudes are like, wait a minute. Hold on. We need all the facts around this one. And it's funny, man, because it's like, yo, niggas are acting like there's a conspiracy to bring down Fab when, like, yo, when was the last time, like, Fab was, like, hot like that? And I mean hot like that in a way in which I'm talking about, like, yo, y'all talking about this vast conspiracy against Fabulous as if Fabulous was about to, like, save the world with some hardcore fucking, like, this mind-moving fucking earth-shattering new release or something. Like, Fabulous was about to say something really important, and the man and the powers that be had to shut him down before he said it. Fabulous. Fabulous. Right? Now, I'm going to read this story. This here actually comes out of Ebony.com. It says that Fabulous has officially been charged with one count of aggravated assault and one count of making terroristic threats against a longtime girlfriend and the mother of his two sons, Emily Bustamante. According to court documents obtained by BASIP, the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office will be trying the throw-it-in-the-bag rapper's case. If convicted, Fab faces 3 to 5 years behind bars and up to $15,000 in fines. While the couple is definitely on the outs, Hollywood Life reports that Bustamante and the Brooklyn rapper still speak every day with her friends, worried that she'll give her alleged abuser another chance. Emily is staying with family right now, but she and Fab are talking daily, and he's begging her for another chance, a source told the site. She hasn't taken him back yet, but a lot of her friends fear it's only a matter of time before she does, because she's already started to make excuses for him. They've broken up and gotten back together so many times over the years, it's hard for her friends to believe that she'll stick to it this time. The only saving grace is that this is out of her hands now, and the courts are involved. Now, there was a lot of people who thought that this was a whole fabricated story, that he never did anything to her, that he wasn't abusive towards her and everything else. There was, the story about, like, she showed up, I believe it was somewhere on the West Coast where he was. He was enraged about it. He threatened to beat her in the head with a baseball bat, but he wasn't going out like that. She came home. She was fearful of the guns that he had in the house. She had her brother and her father come to the home and remove the guns that were in the house, right? Now, there's video of that altercation. So I'm going to play this video, and let me screen share this so you guys can check this out for yourselves. Hold on just a second here. Let me do this. All right. So let's check this out. He's got something in his hand. All right, so he's told her father that there's a bullet with his name on it, that he's got a bullet with his name on it, right? He's talking about, why the fuck do you even have these niggas at my house? Her father and her brother, right? He's pointing something at her. It looks like a sharp object. I'm not really sure what it was. I couldn't really tell from the video, but he's pointing something at her. And there's a bodyguard who's basically trying to keep him away from everyone else, right? As he continues to, like, you know, confront everybody who's there at the house. Now, again, we expect the women around us to come to our defense even when we're wrong. We're looking for ride or dies, right? Now, in Fabulous's case, he found one, right? He found one. And Lil Mo. Now, Lil Mo is out on these social media streets. She's talking about, you know, she needs to find out all the facts around this and everything else. That Fabulous is her brother and everything. We're going to read this story here. This comes out of BASIP. And BASIP says that Lil Mo speaks on Fabulous comment backlash because folks were kind of getting a Lil Mo shit about the ways in which she was defending this dude, right? It says, Lil Mo knows you're big mad, and she's chosen to Olivia Pope the situation surrounding Fabulous and Emily B, and she couldn't care less. The Superwoman songstress recently took to Twitter to defend that after to defend herself that after wait to defend herself after that video of her defending Fab went viral. Now let's listen to this video of her where she was defending Fabulous, man. Let me see if I can pull this up. Where is it? And it's taking a little while for this shit to load. Okay, so here we go. Let me pull this up. I'm going to screen share this with you guys so you can check this out. Also, in the chat. Yeah, let's do this here. All right, so let's check out Lil Mo and what she has to say regarding this particular situation. As soon as this shit decides to load up.
Boy, man. Fabulous.
I was just talking to him.
In the news. How's he doing?
He's good.
Yeah.
I just hit him. I was like, I love you. He said, I love you too, and I appreciate you, Mo. Because I don't know the logistics, but it's crazy. I wore this Freddy vs. Jason, like, unbeknownst to what was going on.
God damn.
Because honestly, even though I'm a part of the culture, I don't get involved in, I know a lot of stuff is hype. Like, how did they get this information? Like, people are turning from one thing to another, and I'm not gonna kick nobody when they down, but it's just certain people. He's managed to make it his whole career without no insult or injury. Stuff had happened, but we brushed it off. But now this, like why, like what the fuck is going on? Like, I'm not letting him go out like that. I'll Olivia Pope this whole situation before I let somebody take my brother down. Some don't seem right. You know what's crazy is everybody that knows Fab behind the scenes, when I always tell him, I said, why don't you do reality, why don't you do your own show? You're funny as shit. He be like, I don't want people, like, he don't want people in that side. So honestly, with social media, I was just like, yo, like, you're fun, like, you're very relatable and stuff like that, but he don't let everybody see that side. So with that being said, I've never seen him yell. I've seen people. We've been on tour, I'll tell you, like, back in.
Okay. So while this shit is doing this thing where it just, you know, it's loading whenever the fuck it wants to, let me just say this, man. There's a whole lot of people who thought O.J. Simpson was a really cool dude. O.J. Simpson was friendly to me. O.J. Simpson was my friend. Like, I never had a, he never raised his voice, man. He was the life of the party, man. He was funny, man. It's a whole lot of white people, really. But like, it was a whole lot of white people who were like, yo, man, O.J. Simpson was my guy, man. We go play golf together, man. We go, like, we get at women. You know, I know he was married to Nicole, but damn it, this is what we did. Right? He was a really good dude. Everybody around O.J. Simpson thought that O.J. Simpson was a really good guy. Well, you know, most of his white friends, right? And then he killed his wife. And we know O.J. did it, right? He killed his wife. And you still have people who will be like, man, but he was such a good guy. Just because they present a certain way to you doesn't mean that they are like that all the time. Right? And so, like, to have Lil Mo get on Revolt TV or whatever this website was, I think it was, yeah, Revolt, and say that, well, like, you know, he's funny, this, that, and the other. I never heard him raise his voice, and I'm an Olivia Pope this whole situation, and, you know, all these sort of things, making excuses for this guy. Like, again, it's one of those things, why so many dudes feel like they can act like a fucking dick and get defended, right? They expect the women around them to defend them because they've been allowed to do this for so long. It's why they have such a reaction when women decide that they're not going to stand up for Stephen Clark because Stephen Clark didn't think much about them. It's why a whole lot of dudes are walking around thinking that these women are supposed to defend them no matter how fucking, how egregious their transgressions are. It's even to the point where a woman gets both of her front teeth knocked out and his friends are like, how they even get all this information? How about why is your boy out here hitting people in the fucking mouth, especially hit the women of his child? The woman of it, like the mother of his child. Why is that not the question that you're asking? Right? But she went on to say, like, because Lil Mo said she, you know, she's not going to back down on this. She says, let's see. The comments, of course. Okay, I don't really care about the comments that people are making. She says, I said what I said. I'm not for anything, and I'm not against anyone. Nothing to clean up. I won't tear down anyone's wall I help build or put their integrity and character in question. More prayer, less posting. Some people super weird. One day they dicking, next day they destroying. Unbelievable. Why are you even worried about shit you can't flush? Just nosy. So unbothered, but so fucking nosy and assuming. Excuse me. My fab, goddamn. Okay, I don't know what the fuck. Yeah, but yeah. 41 people like that shit. 41. You wonder why they call you trash. You wonder why they call you trash. I just kind of wish like we would really think about this on more than a surface level. You know what I mean? Like, so many people were just like, yo, like, they reduced Stephen Clark's thing to, he just like other people. He just like other races. Like, he's not really holding on to black women. He just got a preference for other races. Or you look at Fab and, like, it's a conspiracy to get Fab. Like, why all of a sudden this now? Instead of dealing with the issue is right there in our fucking face. Like, yo, it's a whole lot of brothers who have issues with women of color, and we're washing this shit up. Like, we're pretty much sweeping this shit under the rug and acting as if when women of color decided, like, I don't really have to deal with this shit no more, then suddenly they're part of the problem. They're the problem, and it justifies why these dudes are doing what they're doing. And it doesn't. And it doesn't, man. So, yeah. Like, Stephen Clark does his shit. Fabulous does his shit. And we, you know, you still have defenders who are thinking that, like, yo, Fab should be, you know, given a pass because he's the father of Emily B's kids, or that black women should set aside their differences with Stephen Clark because of the overall messaging of Black Lives Matter, despite the fact that Stephen Clark was openly disparaging of Black Lives Matter, despite the fact that Stephen Clark was openly disparaging of black women in favor of, and not only that, allowing other people to disrespect black women. Mother of his child was also out here saying some reckless shit about black women and expecting these black women to therefore just say, you know what, fuck that. Nah, man. Nah. So, yeah. Yeah, that's what's been going on, man. But we're almost time to get out of here. But of course, before we go, y'all know what we got to do.
Yo, we got some hats now, motherfuckers.
All right, and our ass hat this week is Holly Morris and Allison Seymour. Now, Holly Morris and Allison Seymour are both news anchors at, I believe, Fox 5 DC. And they're upset at the fact that there was a black college student who was accepted into 20 colleges, all 20 of which he applied for. So we're going to, we're just going to play this news segment that was on Fox 5 DC. Let me pull this up for the chat room so they can see this foolishness right along with me here. Let's do that. All right. So here we go. Check this out, y'all.
Applied to 20 colleges and got into every single one. Michael Brown is his name. You're talking Yale, Harvard, Princeton, literally all of them. Mm-hmm.
She sounds really upset that he got into every single one. She's already hyped.
But this has sort of brought on this, and he got full rides to all of them. Full rides. So he has this pick, right? The video went viral, all this stuff. So it has sparked the discussion, though, of how many schools you should apply to. So, and do you think it's a little ridiculous that this kid applied to 20, taking away a spot and basically waitlisting another kid? Yeah.
Okay. Where was this discussion being had? Like, who sparked the discussion? Like, where was this? Like, hey, you know what? Isn't it ridiculous that this kid applied to 20 goddamn schools? Isn't it fucking ridiculous? Like, who, like, why would he do such a thing? I don't know. Maybe because some of the schools that he applied to were really fucking highly fucking selective, and there was a chance that he might not have gotten into all of them. Maybe. Just maybe. Maybe. Maybe there's that.
Probably most people won't agree with me, but I actually think it's ridiculous to apply to 20 schools. I do.
I am urging my children not.
Okay, maybe because you knew you weren't going to get to all 20 schools. Maybe, like, again, maybe it was the schools that you were applying to. Maybe you knew you were going to get into the schools that you were applied to. Some of the schools that he applied to were, like, of the Ivy League selective, like, you know, Yale and Princeton and Harvard. Those are really selective fucking schools, very hard schools to get into. Maybe he was, I don't know, playing the numbers, going to, you know, playing the odds. Hey, I might not get into this one. Maybe I can get into this one. Who knows?
I mean, he could have applied to five. He would have gotten in all five. It would have been equally as impressive. 10 would have been impressive. And you can Google as many articles as you want. Admissions officers will say on average you should apply to 4 to 8 schools, right?
So you think this is a little obnoxious?
I think it's a little obnoxious because you can only go to one. Right. You can only take one full ride. And you are taking a spot from someone else who worked really hard.
How are you taking a spot away from somebody else if you only get... Okay, he only gets to go to one, right? He decides he doesn't want to go to that school. Guess what? There's a spot that just opened up for that kid to go to that school. That same kid who you're saying was not going to be able to go to that school. Guess what? They're getting ready to go. So he's not taking away a spot.
Wait, why not? The kid could get into... I mean, but if you don't take it, the full ride goes back into the pot, right?
Oh, yeah. The best thing about the story, which I stand on, is that 19 kids come off the wait list.
Right.
Yeah. 19 other kids are going to get it. Mm-hmm. But 19 kids also had really sad days and their parents talked them off the ledge.
Tough cookie. Right? Tough motherfucking cookie. Hey, I didn't get into the school. Hey, I got into the school. Talk him off the ledge. I'm pretty sure some of the schools in which this kid applied to, those other kids probably applied to multiple schools as well. I mean, think about that also. Like, they're acting as if he's the only kid who applied to multiple schools. I'm pretty sure that the kids he's competing against to go to these other schools or to have these, you know, to get into these schools, they're also trying to get into other schools as well. He just so happened to get accepted into all 20 that he applied to.
What inspired is that I saw, because this is the conversation I'm always having now with my kids who are looking to go to school after high school, college. And I'm like, five schools.
Yeah,
I think five schools. But there is the math. I found this article on Prep Scholar, and they say if the more selective you want to be, or the more, I guess, selective colleges, that number goes up to 15.
It can go up to 15, but they really say, if you say, look at it this way, around 8, you should have like 3 target schools.
Yeah.
Those are schools you're probably going to get in. You may not, but you're probably going to get in. They're definitely in your range. Have 2 reach schools. Those are ones that,
maybe you don't.
You may not, but who knows? You may. And then you need 2 safety schools. Right?
I mean, that would be, yeah. But I think this kid obviously knew he was super smart.
So is he going to put that, I know, but is he going to put that on his application? This takes nothing away from him. Clearly, he is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know?
This takes nothing away from him. Clearly, he's amazing. And yet, you just spent the better part of the last 2 minutes talking about how ridiculous it was that he applied to 20 schools and got accepted into the 20 schools that he got accepted to. Like, the fact that you're even upset and having a discussion about how ridiculous it was for him to be applying to 20 schools is fucking crazy. It's crazy. Now, we talk about kids, mostly, like, people talk about millennials with such a disdain. You know what I'm saying? Like, even when they're succeeding, you find a way to tear them down, man. And I say this all the time. Sometimes you have to be your biggest cheerleader, because the world will not waste an opportunity to tell you that you ain't shit. And guess what? These ladies on Fox 5 DC couldn't wait to tell this young man that he ain't shit.
This child is amazing.
Story about me, but
we would have done the story if he got in 5.
Right.
In 5 full rides. We would have done
that. No, you wouldn't.
I think it's awesome. I am encouraging my own kids not to whatever, but, you know, maybe if he was looking for the most money or whatever, then I could understand. But, I mean, it's impressive.
20 schools against each other. There is an application fee for everyone, you know.
That's why I'm saying 5, but that's, you know, clearly not my situation.
So, our next topic, how do you feel?
All right. So, you got that going on, right? Now, again, they earn their champ, but I mean, their ass hat of the week. this week here at the Spam Report, Allison Spencer, I'm sorry, Allison Seymour and Holly Moores. Now, we do have our champ of the week.
The champ is here! The champ is here!
All right, our champ this week here at the Spin Report Podcast is none other than the team they were talking about, Michael Brown. Michael Brown is the champ of the week this week. Check out this black boy joy, y'all.
You know, this is the time of year when high school seniors start finding out which college applications have been accepted.
And one young man in the third ward sent out more than enough and was shocked when the responses started pouring in.
Lauren Tallarico is here with this young man's story, and what a story it is, Lauren.
Oh, what a story. And this man's reaction to the very, very good news, absolutely priceless. His name is Michael Brown, and one thing we know for sure is next year, he'll be enrolled in one of America's top universities. He just has to decide which one. If you've ever wondered what a much-deserved payoff looks like, this would be it. Lamar senior Michael Brown learning he got into Stanford University.
I was certainly nervous.
This was a dream he's worked towards for years, and growing up in the economically challenged Third Ward, it's a dream that some may think was just out of his reach.
Stanford, Harvard, Yale.
But here's the thing.
Georgetown, Northwestern.
He got into every school he applied to, including four Ivy Leagues.
I got into all 20, which was, for me, amazing.
The average GPA to get into Harvard is 4.10, Yale 4.19, Princeton 3.90, Michael's 4.68.
God damn.
And his motivation traces back to his mom.
See, when I was in elementary school, I saw my mom graduate from community college, and that just meant a lot to me.
Michael is my rainbow baby. I lost three babies before I had Michael. So I just wanted to be the best mother that I could be to him. I wanted to make sure that he has stability.
And talk about stability. Michael has full rides to every single school, plus $260,000 he's earned in scholarships.
Look at that shit.
Be helpful. Dream big. Don't be afraid.
But to Michael, this isn't just an accomplishment. He hopes it serves as motivation to other kids in the Third Ward, or wherever they may be.
Be proud of your family, of yourself, of your community, and then share your story. Inspire other people to really reach for the stars.
So which school will Michael go to? Well, he doesn't know just yet, but he does have to make that decision by May 1st. We'll keep you posted. Wherever he goes, though, he wants to study political science and then go on to law school. Guys, do you have goosebumps?
That is a drop the mic story.
Yeah, I'm saying
you, yeah. Lauren. Wow.
And political science.
All right. So, yeah, Michael Brown is this Spin Report Podcast champ of the week this week here on episode 201, man. Like, hearing his story and juxtaposing that with those women on Fox 5 DC and how they were discussing his story and about how ridiculous it was that he even applied to 20 schools, man. And you hear where he came from and what he had to go through in order to get to where he got. Man, fuck them. Fuck them. And that's why he's a champ of the week. This week here at the Spin Report Podcast, man, real talk. I'm getting ready to get out of here, y'all. But of course, before I do, I got to let you guys know how to get in touch with us here at the Spin Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, I will play them here on the show and respond in kind. You can also email me here at feedback@thespinreport.com. That's feedback@thespinreport.com. Leave those emails. And of course, those emails will be read here live on the show as well. Go ahead and hit me up at the hotline. Hit your boy up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead and follow your boy there. Chop it up with me throughout the week. Also, go ahead and check out the Spin Report Podcast Network store. Yeah. Go to tpublic.com. Get yourself some gear, man. Check out our store. Get you a Social Justice Warrior t-shirt. Get you a Don't Be a Hater t-shirt for the Beer Chicken Podcast, man. Get yourself a new logo shirt, man. Go get you some stuff. We got some stuff over there, man. We appreciate everybody who goes about the business of going ahead and buying themselves some merch and take a picture with your stuff on, man. Real talk, we really do appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. And for all of your spare and poor needs, go to www.thespareandpoor.com. Everything's available there. You can re-watch this show. You can vote in the polls. You can leave comments there. You can do pretty much everything, man. Go to www.thespareandpoor.com and be a part of the Spare and Poor podcast experience, man. I'm getting ready to get out of here. I will check in with you guys tomorrow because episode 9 of the Beer and Chicken podcast is a thing tomorrow night. So until next time, fam, peace.